Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better, even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing
and make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing, online marketing, social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, thanks for joining us. And I have an incredible guest. We're going to be talking about using apps on your phone, not just using them, but creating them. And my guest name is Mike Hesick, and he's with Mikas Software. He's a good friend. I've worked with him on a couple of apps, and he's just a great guy. So, Mike, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Brian?
Great, man. Well, thanks for joining us. And what I normally like to do is to get people to know your origin story. So your origin story includes being men in tights, from what I understand. You worked at a Renaissance fair as one of the, maybe not the merry men, but the, you know, maybe the sidekick to Robin Hood. And and then from there, you do computer programming. So tell me a little bit about how that all transpired.
Yeah, sure. So not quite Merry Men with Robin Hood, but relatively close. I'd been going to the Renaissance Fair ever since I was a little kid. And in my early college years, I ended up finding contact information to become a cast member. So ever since my sophomore year of college, during the summers, I would give up most weekends throughout the summer to go and be a historical reenactor at the Bristol Renaissance Fair up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. We were usually the guys walking around with the big long spears. We were part of the military group that helps add a little bit of color and flavor to the fair, and a little bit of eye candy as you walk around as a patron for paying your gate fee. Got me through college, met my wife through there, and but like you said, now I'm a computer software engineer, and the rest is history. No pun intended.
Cool. Yeah, no, I hear you. And I've been called a lot of things in my life, but eye candy has never been one of them. Hence why I've got a podcast. So Mike's been working with me for a number of years. We've been in masterminds together and stuff like that. And he is my go-to guy when I run into coding issues. Like we've worked on some large PHP sites. I know he does stuff with Microsoft and C++ and all that kind of stuff, and especially nowadays with WordPress. And but one of the other customers that I have, you were the principal person for him to create an online app for his business. And you know, there's been a lot of interest in that because cell phones obviously are getting more and more prevalent. As a matter of fact, if you start reading Google Analytics, I was on with a client today, and the vast majority, more than 50% of their business is done on the cell phone, and it's less and less desktop. So people are really interested in this kind of thing. So let's talk apps. First and foremost, let's define the difference between just going to your cell phone and creating something on the screen that will open up a web page versus a true app that's on a phone. What's the difference between those things?
Sure. So in the app world, you have what's called native development, and then you have what's considered hybrid development. So native development is you go and you have an idea and you want to create an app for iOS, for the Apple devices. And you go and write it in the language that Apple says you should write the code in to create the app. And that app is only used on and available on Apple devices. Same holds true for Android. You go and you write it in Java and it's only available on an Android device. Hybrid device or hybrid apps are ones that are written in a language that is able to cross barriers, basically. It is a way to write it once and have it deployable on iOS devices, Android devices, Windows devices, if anyone actually still has a Windows phone, and a number of other devices such as, you know, sometimes web-enabled TVs, there's a way to deploy it to there. Apple TV as well, Apple Watch. So it covers a lot of different devices when you do one of these hybrid type apps. When you do a cross-platform app like that, you also do have to worry about the user experience. So user experiences for anyone who's used an Android phone and then tried shifting to an iPhone, or used an iPhone and tried shifting to an Android device, there's a learning curve, right? You're used to one. You're either in the Android shop you're either on the Android bandwagon or you're on the iPhone bandwagon. And trying to use one of those other devices, there's little quirks of the device that only a regular user is familiar with. User controls look different on the different platforms as well. There's different standards for design. And a good cross-platform product that can develop an app for the different brands of phones that are out there, mobile devices that are out there, will make sure that that native user experience is preserved, regardless of if it's on an Android device or an iPhone or an iPad or a Samsung tablet or something like that.
Gotcha. Okay, so you know what you're saying is a native app would be something like one of my friends who's been on the show a handful of times, Joel Kamm, has made millions of dollars, and so have a lot of other people, on apps specifically in the Apple Store. He did the iFart app and just...
Yes.
he blew the doors off with that one. So that would be more of a native app where everything is contained, self-contained within the app, and it's all run off that computer device. And then the hybrid ones are probably more geared towards using external data and pulling things in, like a third-party app that would pull in, let's say, you know, a perfect example for me would be something like Evernote, where there's a desktop version, there's a phone version, and there's a web version at the same time. Is that kind of the sense of the difference between the two as well?
Not per se. The native and the hybrid are more used when defining how the app is going to be created and how it's going to be distributed. When you're talking about data, most apps nowadays will use some form of external data communication, whether they're making a web call using your data plan on your phone to get the latest questions for a quiz app that you might have, or if it's manually checking for an updated set of some kind of data to be used within the app. Nowadays, most apps are making some kind of data call. So there's less of a distinction now with a phone that's purely contained, or app rather, that's purely contained on your phone versus something that might have some kind of additional external resources available to it. Example of something of an app like that would be something that might have, I'm sure most people have seen this nowadays with any contractors that come out to your house. If you have a plumbing problem or a roofing problem, sometimes the people that come out, the contractors that come out, have a mobile app on their phone, and they're supposed to take a picture of the house before a picture of the problem that they're there to fix. And then once they're done with the work, they take another picture showing that the work's completed, so that way the home office can see the before and after pictures. And then there's usually, you know, you usually now sign the phone or the tablet with your finger to sign off on the work, instead of having a paper work order that you have to sign now. Now, at the home office, they actually have a desktop application, whether it's something that's installed on the computer or more likely it's a web-based system, so that way they can access it from anywhere. And it's something that loads in the web, in a web browser, Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer, what have you. Mm-hmm. And it works with the same amount, the same data. So when the contractor's taking the pictures or putting in notes about the work that's being done, that information is being uploaded to the cloud somewhere. And then that cloud-based data is then able to be accessed by that web-based application that's loaded in a browser for the back office to make sure that the contractor arrived on time, they did the work in a timely manner, everything was done to spec, things like that. So that's more of an example of one of these multi-tiered or multi-faceted applications that you're starting to see now in the business world, mm-hmm. Compared to just a fart app where you download it on your phone and it does one thing and makes fart noises. Or if it's a quiz app where you're just downloading a trivia application on your phone and you're sitting there answering questions about your favorite topic, whether it's Doctor Who or your favorite sports team or something like that. That's generally not making a lot of data calls out, if any, aside from maybe any ads that are being populated into the app.
Right.
Using it to kind of help generate ad revenue for the developer.
Yeah, that's one of the ways that a lot of these guys do is they'll give you a free app with ads, and then you can upgrade for $1.99 or $5 or sometimes $100. So let's, since we delved into the money, the free versus paid, you talked about, you know, something like a custom app that has been developed for a company to, like you said, take pictures, gather data, get signatures, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's, you know, Thrive and other CRMs and things that do that kind of stuff. When does it make sense financially? Because I, you know, first and foremost, let me ask you this question. You know, it's a loaded question. What's it cost to build an app? You know that, you know, it's like $1 or it could be $50 million. But what are some of the criteria that you say, you know, does this make good business sense to do as a custom app versus maybe trying to facilitate through a third-party program that's already been built up?
Sure. So one of the big things that I usually talk people through is taking a look at the problem that they're trying to solve. So say they have a specific workflow that they're trying to either streamline or take it from being papered, you know, paper trail to electronic. And we go and look to see, is there something currently out there in the market that either 100% fills the need that they have, or does it get them 60% of the way there, or is it only 40% of the way there? You know, what is it currently out there? So we take a little time and we figure out what some of their possible options might be. If there is something out there that currently works for them or it gets them part of the way there, the next question then is, say in the case of taking a process and taking it from a paper trail to electronic. Say that there's an app out there that currently exists in the marketplace. It's highly rated. It's well supported. The developer is continuing to make updates to it, and it gets them only 50% of the way there. The question that I then ask who I'm working with is, can you then change that last 50% of your process in order to fit the mold of someone else's product? Or are you okay with continuing to do it in a manual way or some other disjointed way and be happy with that electronic version of 50% of your process? And if they are okay with that, then all the more power to them, and they go along on their merry way. But more times than not, they either are set in their ways, which is not always a bad thing. If they have a process that works, they want to preserve it. They just want to turn it into an electronic version of the same workflow. That's definitely a road that they'd rather go down. I help them with that. And then we take a look at doing a cost-benefit analysis where we sit down and we figure out, okay, if you're doing this process start to finish, you know, how many man hours per week are you spending or are your employees spending on doing this particular process? And we'll sit down, we'll figure all that out. And then we look and we say, okay, now if they're doing this using an app, what is the difference in time? And usually once we sit down and we actually figure out those numbers, so long as it's a process within reason, you know, it's a well-scoped, a well-defined process that they're trying to find a solution for, there's usually a pretty obvious answer whether they should keep doing it the way that they're doing it, because creating an app is not going to be beneficial from a cost perspective, or they're going to look at it and go, okay, it's costing me $20,000 per year just for this worker to do the process that they're doing now, because they have to walk 2 minutes per time or per trip or per work order that they have to process between their desk and the filing cabinet. But they're doing that 2 minute walk 6 times a day, 5 days a week, four weeks a month, 12 months a year. And I pay them $15 or $20 an hour. That money adds up. And people don't always realize that lost revenue that exists until they sit down and try to do one of these cost benefit analysis processes on their workflows, and it pretty quickly becomes evident what decision they should make, if they're going to try to actually do an app or if they're going to keep doing the process that they're following.
Gotcha. Okay, totally makes sense. So let's get to the 64 cent or $64,000 question. You know, what is the development of an app? And I know it varies all over the place. But if somebody's walking in the door and they say they want to start an app, what's a good number to have in their mind as kind of like the middle section that they want to do? Granted, you know, they're not trying to create Star Wars, and they're also not trying to create an iFart. It's something that's actively for their business. What's a good median area to start, and where does it expand or contract?
And I mean, and you hit it on the head right out of the gate that it is completely up to the client as far as how much it costs. You know, everyone always talks about you can have it cheap, you can have it fast, or you can have it good. You can only pick two, right? So, and just like with anything technology-based, you can always find someone who's willing to do it for $10 an hour, or you can find someone who's going to charge $200 an hour to do it. For an average app from a reputable house, you're probably looking at anywhere from $7,000 to $20,000, probably just to get a base app with relatively streamlined functionality in place. It also depends too if what platforms you're planning on targeting. If you're just targeting iPhone, it might be a little bit cheaper because you don't have to worry about some of the problems that you run into with Android and vice versa. So again, it all depends on scope. So it certainly is not cheap, but there's a client that I worked on a project for, which was one of these multifaceted projects that had a back of house application that was loaded in a browser, and it also had a mobile component. And they had been doing business this way for decades. And we went in there and did a cost benefit analysis, and it, for the number of workers that they had on the floor doing this same task and doing all the walking around that they were doing, they were losing over $50,000 a year for one shift, and they had three shifts running. So it was $150,000 a year lost just in people walking around the office, in lost revenue. And within less than 2 years after developing the app, they made that money back within the first year and a quarter, I think. So 14 to 15 months after the app went live, they made their initial investment back. And then, so then at that point, there's banking at that point. And also too, it allowed them to triple their throughput, eliminating the walking around. It also streamlined the actual process that they were doing, because they didn't just build an app that fixed this one problem. They had tackled a few problems at the same time. It is a process, and it's a living, breathing organism. People sometimes think, oh, we built it once and it's good, right? And I always ask them, how many times have you had to fix something on your house? Or how many times have you had to fix something on your car? It's, you know, things break. Technology changes, especially with our current day and age. Technology changes very quickly, and there's new vulnerabilities found in software all the time that we have to patch and fix. So people need to be aware too that if you are going to develop an app, there is a maintenance cost that's involved with it as well. That Apple changes their operating system all the time. Android does as well. You constantly have to be pushing updates to your app to make sure that you're staying current with whatever the current operating system is of the app as well.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that kind of gives a really great picture and scope of this thing. I mean, to kind of summarize what you said is that, you know, first and foremost, I mean, it starts at 7,000. You said it goes all the way up to six figures. I think the most important thing is not just saying, I want an app, and no offense to anybody in India, but, you know, going to India and getting $10 an hour and they will build you an app. But then maintaining it is one thing. Doing cost benefit analysis is another thing. Somebody who really understands the scope of change, you know, builds in the right code so that it is easier to change and you don't have to rewrite it every single time. You know, sometimes you can buy it really cheap and then you got to go back and rewrite it over and over again because of the way it was written originally. So I think there's a, you know, economies of scale. So that's one piece of it. The other part of it is realizing that there is going to be maintenance, that there's going to be updates. I mean, you and me go through this all the time with WordPress. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's, you know, WordPress updates, we can't do anything about it, yet you still have to spend time you know, updating plugins, and then there's plugin conflicts and there's crashes and, you know, dealt with one last night where reCAPTCHA works great on a form, but doesn't work on another plugin. And it's like, it's just the nature of the beast.
It is.
So let me ask you one final question on this. Sure. And give me a, you know, either one or two real world examples of apps that you've done that have really kind of changed the way that somebody has run their business or helped them to make money or has proven to be a really good case study for you.
Sure. There is one that I've worked on that this was a food producer, and what they were doing was they're using it more for inventory and tracking where things were at between the time that it was in the nursery being grown from a seed to the time that it was planted in the ground and then moved to a finishing processing plant to be cleaned up and then packaged for shipment across the nation for sales in grocery stores. So what this did again was taking something that was purely a paper process, or people were using Excel to auto-generate numbers and moving that information into an Access database to then use Access Report Writer to output to a sheet of labels using a barcode converter to then slap these things on boxes. We were able to create an application that had a web component as well as a mobile component that allowed them to be scanning barcodes, generating barcodes, moving inventory around. And it drastically changed, again, not only their reporting capabilities and knowing literally almost in real time where anything was across the thousands of acres that they were using. Tape it up that you found all the items that are supposed to be in this box. You've scanned them as you've put them in, ready to move on to the next box. And then they're able to just keep going. So instead of having a sheet of paper that sometimes if you use an off the counter or off the shelf scanner, sometimes what you'll have to do is you'll have to scan those expected barcodes before you scan the barcode that is in question of the item that you're about to put into a box for some of the cheaper options. Sometimes too, you do have hardware options that will do what this app does. The difference is this app is just using your phone that everyone already has in their pocket. So for someone who has a small business and doesn't necessarily have the hardware budget to buy some of these scanners that might cost the upper hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to have, and then have to worry about storing them so they don't walk away off the production floor, they're able to have cheap $100 or $200 phones that they're able to then put on the production floor to take over this type of operation to speed up their workers' throughput.
Well, Mike, it's been a blast, man. I've learned a lot. And I think that this laid out, you know, at least a good understanding of the whole app development process, the cost analysis, the way that it works. And, my get rich quick scheme has died in its, in its glory. Boom, it's gone. No, that's cool. I didn't really have one. I'm just kidding. but no, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. If people want to get a hold of you or follow you, what's the best way for them to do that?
My website is mikassoftware.com. Mikas is MIKAS, and then the word software, no hyphens, .com. Email address to reach me at would be info@mikassoftware.com as well.
All right, dude. Well, once again, I really appreciate you. I appreciate your time coming on and dropping some sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps. And man, it's a pleasure to finally get you on here and talk tech.
Absolutely.
In a very high level way. So hopefully the audience found this as interesting as I did, man. And thanks so much and have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian. It's been great. Appreciate the time.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.